AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide from Syngenta, the first dicamba herbicide premix, which offers both contact control to manage the weeds you see and residual control to help protect against the weeds you don't see yet. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide. Okay, rain still matters, and so do exports. But today, and maybe only for today, in honor of Bubba, we're going to assume the markets know all the fundamental hullabaloo, and we're going to listen closely to what trade activity is telling us with some open interest analysis.
Live from a snow fort that built itself, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we will talk open interest with analyst Gary Stern. Right after the news, make way for Bubba Todd, Bubba Horowitz from BubbaTrading.com. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yes, we are going to take a little bit of a different look at the markets today. Okay. We talk about it. We skirt the edges of talking about open interest. And we do talk about fund positioning and how the funds, we talk about it regularly, and what the funds might be thinking, what they might be doing next, what they have done, and how it has influenced price action. But we're going to take a deeper dive into it today with some real open interest analysis. PVOI. Price volume open interest. That's what Gary Stern focuses on. And he looks at those three things. And from those three things, you can take messages from those three things on what money flow is doing, what momentum is doing. And we're going to listen closely to what Gary has got to say about it, because for the first time in quite some time, we may be looking at the grain markets again, and Gary is looking at the grain markets again, the ag markets. So I'm looking forward to the conversation with Gary. They've been great when we've had them in the past, and we haven't had them on for a while just simply because there wasn't a lot of need. Well,
sure.
After the way that these markets have traded over the last 4, 5, 6 months, it's time to get Gary back on here and talk about it.
So let's go full Cousteau. Deep beneath the surface of the markets, we find the open interest analyst in his natural habitat.
I like it. Old Jacques. I love it. Love it, love it. All right, man, let's go ahead and get to it. What you got in the news?
Chip, wheat futures were an anchor on the grain markets today, which may be an indication that wheat is once again the short leg of spreads against corn and soybeans, or chart watchers say the two-day jump in wheat prices from Friday was enough to encourage a round of profit-taking in the form of long liquidation. With little change in the fundamentals of the market, money flow and influence from corn and soybeans will be the primary drivers of price action in wheat. July HRW wheat was 5.5 cents lower, 635.75. July soft red slipped 7 cents, 640.5. September spring wheat down 7.25 cents, 630.75. Chip.
It feels like the European wheat market is going to start having more and more influence over how the U.S. market is going to trade on a day-to-day basis. February 15, we're, 2 weeks away, a little more than 2 weeks away from the first tranche of export taxes on Russian wheat exports from being initiated. We'll see how much that slows things down and what it does to the European market.
Ethanol production in the week ended January 22nd averaged 933,000 barrels per day, down 12,000 barrels from the previous week. That production tally is also 9.3% behind the year-ago pace.
Geez.
Ethanol stocks of 23.602 million barrels were basically steady with the previous week, 2.6% below year-ago levels. Traders will be looking to the stocks data for proof of reports that China is back and buying U.S. ethanol. USDA this morning announced the sale of 680,000 metric tons of U.S. corn for delivery to China in the current marketing year. That follows yesterday's sales announcement of 1.36 million metric tons. The increase in demand, however, could not generate upside momentum after corn futures pushed to new contract highs. Instead, profit-taking weighed on corn prices through the close. March corn futures 1¾ cents higher, 534. May corn up a penny and a half, 535¼. December corn closed at 442½. That one's down 2 cents on the day, Chip.
Yeah, the bull spread should have worked like they did work today in a market that's got as much export demand in it, as much, I would like to say, domestic demand, but with those ethanol production numbers softening up like they are, the availability of corn to the U.S. user should be okay.
USDA this morning also announced the sale of 132,000 metric tons of beans for delivery to China in the current marketing year, with another sale of 126,500 metric tons of old crop beans sold to unknown destinations. Bean trade was volatile after the sales announcements, and the overall strong export demand picture for U.S. beans helped the market hold on to slight gains. March bean futures 4½ cents higher, 1374¾. May beans firmed 3¾ cents, 1373¼. Novi beans closed at 1149¼, up 0.75 cents, Chip.
Yeah, March beans kind of trading in that staging range that we were at just before we made that shot up over $14. The thing that concerns me about March beans today is that we did close just below the opening range. That might send a signal that we need to set back after the last couple of days of gains.
March cotton was 87 points lower, 80.84. December cotton dropped 61 to 78.08. On the livestock side, cash cattle trade is getting started for the week. Bids are up from a year ago, but remain at a discount to front month futures. February live cattle, 55 cents lower, 116.45. April, down 47½ to 122.62½. March feeder cattle dropped $1.40 to 140.07½. And on the snout side, February lean hogs firmed 12½ cents to 70.57½. April hogs down 65, 76.30. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Todd Horwitz, BubbaTrading.com. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good because I'm in my new home of Las Vegas, paying a lot less taxes. But other than that, I'm not real thrilled with the grain markets the last day or so. I didn't like that big sell-off the other day, and the rally was more natural. I'm a little concerned. I'm vaguely blue.
Okay. So looking to get bluer or ready to move to the red side of the card?
I would love to get bluer. I want them to prove to me today's action was pretty skanky from from where we were early.
Skanky.
You know, at one time we were up in over 20 in beans and almost 10 in corn. Yep. Yep. And then to turn actually negative for a while on corn, that's pretty concerning. But hopefully it'll hold, and the work will be done, and we'll get through it. Because but you're starting to see a lot of crazy things happen in all asset classes, especially if you've heard the stock GameStop. A lot of crazy things are going on right now, and hopefully this is not the start of a much bigger sell-off.
Well, I was just going to ask, are you taking any signals from what is happening with GameStop?
Well, you know, that reminds me, Chip, of the, of 08, 09. It reminds me of, there's the final shorts are getting squeezed. I'm a little bit concerned. You know, the big tip-off in 08, 09 was really, believe it or not, Minneapolis wheat in January when it traded 24 cents.
Oh, my God.
So, you know,
I brought that up as an I brought that up as an example to Davis and to Big Apple
That's
Joe Stackler just the other day.
Could have made a killing.
There you go. See? And see how great minds think a lot. Davis Michelson, what's up, brother?
How you doing, Bubba? Hey, did you win that house in Vegas in a craps game in an alley somewhere? You did, didn't you?
No, but I won it because of the bubble. I'll tell you that, because I did buy a house here. Now, here's the other problem. I know you got to go, but here's the other problem. I bought a house 16 months. I made 45% on a house I bought, sold it and bought another house. And the house I bought is up 45% already.
Good grief.
And more housing
like
sales
in 2006. Buddy.
There's the
Thanks,
issue.
Bubba.
Huh?
Thanks.
Bye, baby. Thank
Later.
You.
We know that weed resistance is a big challenge for soybean growers. Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta, joins us now. Bobby, what are some ways growers can delay the development of weed resistance in their fields?
Yeah, thanks, Chip. Weed resistance continues to be a persistent problem that growers have been challenged with for years. And unfortunately, it's one that's not going away. However, with an integrated approach to weed management, we can fight back to have clean fields and maximize yield. At Syngenta, we strongly believe in designing a portfolio of products with multiple effective sites of action. Overlapping residuals is a great way to fight back against tough-to-manage weeds, provide season-long coverage, and maximize the crop's yield potential.
Excellent. You know, I've heard it said before, it's the overlapping of the residuals that plays a key role in the weed management strategy. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Growers today have several options with respect to soybean seed trait platforms. However, regardless of trait platform a grower chooses to plant, a herbicide strategy needs to start with a pre-emergent herbicide to provide that early season weed management, and then it needs to follow up with a early post-application that delivers both contact and residual weed control. We're fortunate at Syngenta to have products like Tavium that can be applied in dicamba-tolerant soybeans over the top, which is going to deliver both contact and residual weed control, controlling the weeds you see and the ones you don't.
That's perfect. Thank you, Bobby. That was Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead from Syngenta, discussing the resistance management benefits of using a premix herbicide product like Tavium. Don't let time run out on your herbicide management plan. Visit SyngentaUS.com/Tavium or speak with your Syngenta retailer to learn more. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium plus Vapor Grip technology is a restricted-use pesticide. Vapor Grip is used under license from Monsanto Technology, LLC.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now we talk about supply and demand on this show all the time. We talk about supply and demand reports from USDA and the balance sheets. We're going to talk about supply and demand today, but we're going to put a twist on it. So get your head right for this, because we're going to be talking about supply and demand for futures contracts. Okay? How much money is flowing onto the long side of the market? How much money is flowing onto the short side of the market? It's a little different twist to supply and demand, but it's still the basic concepts. Let's bring him in. Gary Stern, open interest analyst. He joins us right now. Gary, it is good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing well, Chip. It's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Yes, it has. And
there hasn't been much going on, and as you know, things have certainly livened up in the last couple of months. Yep. And not just in the grain markets, but in other markets as well. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah. Now, just confirm to the AgriTalk listeners out there that it's not like I haven't tried. I've gotten back to Gary time to time and just said, "Listen, do we need to talk about anything?" And Gary's been very upfront with it and just said, "No, there's not a lot to talk about in these markets."
And I had been working on a book. I dropped everything because the markets were really not doing anything of interest. And I spent the last couple of years writing a book, How I Trade Stocks, and took a lot of the principles of commodity trading to stocks. And so that's taken up a lot of my time, but it's good to be back. And it's good to see these markets liven up again.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think you were on the line and listening when I talked about PVOI, price, volume, open interest. Did I get that about right when we were talking about it?
Sure.
Well, okay.
You know, basically, it's every day what I do is I hand write this, the high and the low, the net change, and the volume and the open interest. And that's telling me one day's action generally is not indicative of anything, but it's the trend that you're looking for. For example, it might surprise people to know that yesterday, wheat was up 16 3/4. Its open interest increased by 6,575 contracts. And what I do is I take the open interest and I divide it by the volume to get a number. And the open interest increase in wheat was greater than corn or soybeans.
Really?
For example, the open interest in soybeans was 6,161. The volume was 217,115. But the volume in wheat was 132,931, not a little bit more than half, but the open interest increased greater than that of soybeans.
Yeah.
So there was some real strong buying in wheat yesterday. And not only that, but in the March contract, because my high and low numbers each day are based on the lead month, the open interest went up in March, whereas in beans it went down 34.79. And in corn, it declined 87.50.
Okay.
So even though the percentage gain in corn yesterday was greater than wheat, the open interest relative to volume was much stronger in wheat than in corn.
Gotcha. Okay, so take that to the next step. What is that? Today we've got wheat under pressure. What does this tell us going forward?
Well, first of all, you know, as the website indicates, I have buy and sell signals that I have developed over a period of years. And these tell me what side of the market I should be on. Right now, we're kind of in between land. So, for example, let's look at wheat. For wheat to continue its rally higher, okay, it has to make a low, a daily low, above $6.61.
Okay.
Today's low was $6.52.5 in the March contract. This, in soybeans, it has to make a daily low for it to move higher of 13.75. Now, here's the thing with corn. Corn and wheat, both, in my view, can be moving sideways to higher in the next month or so, just based on the seasonal trends. But the problem with corn is this. It made its high of 541.5. on January 13. It ticked above that just a little bit today. Mm-hmm. Here's what listeners should be watching for. For the rally in corn to continue, it has to make at least one daily low above that previous high of 541.5 made on January 13. So it isn't that corn makes a new high that's important in my process. It's that it has to make a low above that previous high.
What that is telling us, Gary, I'll just ask you, because to me it's a momentum indicator in a big way. Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In other words, it's kind of like, think of it as kind of like a high jump. The pole vaulter hurdles over it, they raise it, has to do it for a higher level. These are indicators whether or not the market has the steam to make that high. And the other thing, let's get back to soybeans. Soybeans made a high of 14.36.5 on the 13th. I have, and have always had a problem, or when I say a problem, to be cautious when things get up to those old highs, because that tells you where supply and demand, where basically demand tailed off and supply came in. Okay. Buyers went on strike, sellers came on board. And so when it gets up to those old highs, even if it's able to make that low above 13.75, when it gets up to 14.36, people should be cautious. Because very often those, to get above that, and I use the example of corn at 541.5, it has to make a low above to move higher. For soybeans to move higher in the March contract, the low has to be above 14.36.5.
Wow. That's a ways away, dude.
That's right. And that's why I have these benchmarks, because they're telling, if it consistently can't do it, it's telling you that there's trouble.
Okay.
It's a sign of caution. And as I talk about in the book, How I Trade Stocks, that it's not about being right, It's about managing risk and losing less or not losing if possible. So, for example, in these grain markets right now, they can go either way, which from the speculator's point of view is not a good bet.
Right, right. Well, you know, everything that you're talking about, Gary, it's unusual. I think you heard Bubba, Todd Horowitz, at the start of the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's unusual for him to hem and haw a little bit about the markets. He's either, I'm on the blue side, I'm on the red side. Today he was, you know what, I'm a little bit on the blue side. I'd like to be a little bit more, but I'm what? You're explaining why he has that attitude, and I don't know if Bubba even realizes why he's got that attitude, but you're explaining it.
Very often people have things when they're watching markets, they have intuitive feelings about a market, and he's a pro. He's been around a long time, and so he gets a feeling when he's watching something about whether or not something is trading right.
Right.
And what I did was I went back over many years and systematized it, so I have markers that tell me when this thing can move higher. And when you get up to that top, well, let's say beans gets up to near that 1430 area, that is when position management, and I discussed this in the book in a great detail for equities, but it's also appropriate for commodities, where you have to start managing your risk. So if you're long, maybe you write calls against the futures position, or if you're long calls, you write calls against the futures position. In other words, you get more cautious when prices get up to those levels because you know the benchmark it has to make in order for it to move higher.
Right. Okay. Making notes like crazy here, Gary. Now, when we come back, I want to, again, let's take it another step. What happens if we do get a close in March corn above 541.5? What happens if we do get a close in March soybeans above?
It's not a close.
A low above.
Okay. All right. We can get into that when you're ready.
Man, okay. Well, the first thing I'm going to do is make sure that everybody understands that we're talking about a low, not a close above. Wow.
That's right.
It's all over my notes, and I just said it wrong. We're talking to Gary Stern, open interested analyst. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Attaché maintains a 22 million metric ton corn import projection for China. That's 4.5 million metric tons higher than USDA's official forecast. In Brazil, rains are welcome, but it is also slowing down the harvest. The Association of Brazilian Grain Exporters slashed its outlook for the country's January soybean exports from 1.027 million metric tons to just 225,000 metric tons. Adverse weather prompts several Ukrainian ports on the Black Sea to restrict operations. Biden's Commerce Secretary nominee backs use of tariffs and export limits against Chinese firms, and Beijing to enhance checks for imported goods. Of course, taking a look for coronavirus. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Man, I've been working too hard, 10-hour days, and I'm tired.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Gary Stern, open interest analyst, with us today. Before we get back to Gary, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat was 5.5 cents lower at 635.75. July soft red off 7 cents, 640.5. March corn futures 1.75 cents higher, 534. May corn firmed a 1.5 cents to close at 535.25. March bean futures 4.5 cents higher, 1374.75. May beans up 3.75 cents, 1373.25. March cotton 87 points lower, 80.84. February live cattle were 55 cents lower, 116.45. March feeder cattle dropped a buck 40 to 140.07 and one half. And February lean hogs gained 12.5 cents to 70.57.5. That's your quick market recap. Back to you.
All right. Thank you very much. We're talking with Gary Stern. Gary is open interest analyst. And Gary, what's the website?
Openinterestanalyst.com.
Okay. Very simple. Openinterestanalyst.com.
Right.
Between headline news and the restart of the program, Gary, I flash back 33 years to today, 33 years ago, when I was on the floor of the Board of Trade as a young reporter, and guys were on the edge of the pits, hand charting price action with X's and O's in point and figure analysis charts.
Right, right.
Is that where the basis for this comes from?
Well, actually, thank you for bringing that up. Actually, the point and figure charting is very relevant to what's happening in the equity market right now. And in it, on the cover, I have some subheads, and one of them is timing market risk. And I wanted to kind of connect that to the grain markets. On December 21, the S&P 500 went negative in the point and figure, in this point and figure protocol, and the NASDAQ did it on January 15. Today, the New York Stock Exchange will likely go negative as well. What that means is we'll probably see a rally in futures, in equity futures in the broad market. But here's how this ties into the grain markets. Very often, the equity and grain markets are non-correlated, but occasionally they are correlated. Okay. And if we and if the market acts as I expect it should, which is after a rally of a couple of days to resume its downturn because the earnings season will be over, we may find that the grain markets are dragged down by the equity markets, and that's why that's relevant.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. Going to be watching it closely here. Okay. So back to the question that I had at the end of the segment. I want to make sure that I phrase it right because I don't want anybody saying, yeah, but I thought you said. So what happens if we see a low above 541.5 in March corn, a low above 1436.5 in March soybeans?
Okay. Very often what happens after that is there's a sharp snapback. It may last for a day or two, but it shouldn't last beyond 2 days. Then it resumes higher if it's for real. It has to stay above that for at least a week, 5 days. In other words, if it you can get signals can fake you out all the time.
Sure.
So, for example, it makes a low above that, it snaps back for a day or two, or maybe it just keeps going, which happens. That's really strong action. So, for example, it makes a low above 541, the next day it continues to close higher, and then maybe moves sideways and then somewhat slightly higher. You're off to the races at that point. I think if anything is going to do it, it'll be corn.
Okay. Well, yeah, I've been for a long time, Davis. I remember when I was counting the tallies of how many days or sessions in a row corn was closing above the opening range.
Yes.
And I was using that as a momentum indicator.
Did you make 13, was it? I think it was 13?
14, I think 14? We ended up at. Yeah. But, Gary, that was me saying to listeners out there, listen, I think corn's the strongest of the markets. Beans are advancing most quickly. But corn is the strongest of the markets right now. Am I wrong or right?
You're right. And here's something else that's really interesting about corn and the rest of the grains. What I do for the COT reports is I convert the managed money longs and shorts into ratios so I can have an easy comparison.
Yeah.
The ratio for corn is 9.75. One. So there is 9.75 longs for every one short in the managed money category. Now, when corn was at this price level back in 2010, when it was on its uptrend, the ratio was actually higher than that. It was about 10.75 to 1. So even though the COT report showed it as relatively high, when it was at this level back in 2010 on its way up to 850, it was actually higher than this. Now, in soybeans, the ratio is 8.07 to 1. Back when soybeans were at the $14 level back in June of 2014, it was actually much lower than that, an average of about 2.78 to 1. So in other words, there were far fewer longs in the market back in June of 2014 when it was at this level than longs in the market currently.
Gotcha.
That tells me that soybeans are vulnerable to a setback, a sharp setback. And seasonally, that's a tendency it has at least into February.
Right, right. Okay. Okay. We've talked about what a confirmed breakout to the upside would look like. What would a sell signal look like?
Sell signal. Good.
Analysis?
I'm glad you asked. Okay. The sell signal in March, this is March beans, it would be a high below, a daily high below 1336. So we're a ways away from that. For wheat, the daily high would have to be below 639. For corn, we're a long ways from that. It would be 495.
495. So there's lots of wiggle room between here and a sell signal in all these markets.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that is where position management comes into play. Are you going to be in futures? Are you going to be in options? Are you going to be in some kind of a call spread, a put spread? That's where what I call position management, and I talked about position management a lot in the book, because it's one thing to have a strategic view of a market. For example, beans and corn, we think are going higher in the next couple of months. I think we all agree on that. But you have to have a tactical approach to keep your drawdowns to a minimum, because you can be right longer term and be wrong short term. It's all about managing that short term risk. That's where those signals help you. They're telling you, you may be right long term, but for now, you're going to be wrong. The other thing is this, and it's a phenomenon you probably have witnessed. When everybody knows something's in a bull market, the bull market shakes your confidence. And I'll give you an example. Gold and silver topped in early August. Gold made a new high, silver didn't. Since then, they've been trading sideways to lower. Gold's about $250 down from its high. I have no doubt it will challenge that high at some point. But everybody knows it's a bull market. And so markets don't make it easy for you to get on board a bull market. They're going to rattle your confidence. And the way they do that is to have these sell-offs.
Wow, Gary, it was a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it, Davis, that I was making a big deal that CNBC and Fox Business was talking about the rally in beans?
When you hear those chuckleheads start talking the ag markets, it's over.
Well, I think Gary's explaining why. Gary's explaining why. You know, it's one thing to make the observation that they're talking about it, to understand why it creates what we saw last week in corn and soybeans. That's a different level of understanding than what I've got.
Getting back to GameStop for a minute.
Okay.
You know, the shorts in GameStop made the same mistake shorts made all along, and that's one of the chapters in my book, that short sellers are the investor's best friend. Because short sellers generally are terrible at short selling, and the reason for that is they don't have a defined exit when they get into their position. Nobody should have been short in that stock when it broke much above its previous all-time high, which was $65.
Right.
So if you always know where you're going to get out when you get in, you may get hurt, but you're not going to get hurt too badly. It's when you don't have those parameters in place, when you enter a position, you get into what, as I talked about in the book, position drift, which is a kind of go with the flow. You really have no parameters for profit or loss.
Gotcha. I've only got 30 seconds left here, but I'm going to ask you, which direction is the dollar going?
Well, I got a buy signal in the dollar about a week and a half ago. I think it's going higher.
I think it must have been the low above 89.32.50 that triggered that buy signal.
Yeah, I got it. It was on January 15th. I just looked at my notes. Yeah.
I get it. I get it, Gary. Well done, sir. Well done, oh, man. You. Now, listen, we're going to do it again in the not-too-distant future if you will do it, because I think this is a concept. These are market happenings that I think is important for listeners to understand. So I want to get you back on, and we'll talk about it again sometime not too long ago.
Okay?
All right.
Very good.
Gary, thank you so much. OpenInterestAnalyst.com. Go there. Check it out.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Dallaro Complete. Keep your operation moving forward with Dallaro Complete from Bayer.
Davis, one of the reasons that I enjoy talking with Gary as much as I do is because the guy has big thoughts. He has some complicated thoughts.
Yes.
And he has the ability to explain those thoughts and what they mean.
Yes.
I respect that so much. So much.
And, you know, it's
able to do that.
The way he does it, it's almost like watering a garden, you know? You don't want to just hold the hose over one area for a while. You kind of you sprinkle it, and then you pause for a moment.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that, because for me, there were some things that needed to percolate down a little deeper before I was ready for another dose. And he did that fantastically well.
Right. And a lot of times when we're talking about chart outlook and chart analysis, what you just explained has to happen. It's doing two segments like we usually do with our guest analysts with Kerry Artak once a month would not get you near as much out of Kerry as what we get in 5 minutes of commentary once a week on Monday afternoons.
Right.
Because it's the smaller doses. I hear you, man. But the psychology of the market, you know, like I said, he explained what Bubba was saying and why he was saying it.
Yes, he did.
And Gary backed it up and basically said, listen, Bubba's been doing this a long time. He's a pro. He intuitively knows this stuff. And there's a lot of this, what he talks about, that I guess you through osmosis you kind of pick it up. I mean, is the market trading right? There's a lot of times when people will just say, of course the market's trading right, it's the market's never wrong. Well, that's not exactly what the question is. You know, is the market trading right? Is volume lining up with price action? Are the changes in open interest and price, do they make sense? When they don't start to make sense, that's when you get a little worried and start saying, well, you know, I'm kind of cautiously on the blue side of the market right now. I'm not really sure about how these markets are trading. Corn should have held up better than what it did today. You know, that's when you start getting comments, and it starts to raise some concerns. I'm not saying that today's price action in corn and soybeans was a sell signal. We closed higher, for criminy's sakes. But I am saying that maybe it's a chink in the armor of a bull market. So it's worth paying attention to.
Sure is.
His ratio that he's looking at, the number of long positions compared to short positions on the speculative side of the market when we were at these prices before. He was talking about when we were at these prices before on the way up. And if you'll remember a couple of weeks ago when all of a sudden everybody was talking about the highest prices in 6.5 years. Well, at that time, the 6.5 years ago, prices were on the way down. What does that tell you? You know, that we've recovered X% of whatever decline we had from the 2012-13 highs to the, what, the 17, 18 lows, whatever it was. So that's all that's really telling you. So more importantly is go all the way back to 10 and take a look at where we at what was happening when prices were at this level on the way up. I talked about that 2 days in a row. It's that important of a difference that you got to look at it. And basically what Gary was saying was that there's still room on the long side of the market. Yep. Right now we're at 9.75-1 on the long to short ratio. Back in 2010, we were at 10.75-1. So there is room on the long side of the market. I think that's fascinating analysis. Really, really good. Really good. Yeah.
It is, if we can switch gears just real quick.
Yes.
It's please. Weird. It's weird that Bubba brought up Minneapolis wheat because you were just, I mean, seriously, you were just talking about that.
Yeah.
To me and Big Apple Joe.
Yep.
And it's kind of weird. So that's twice. Now, if this comes up a third time, I'm of the mind something like that comes up three times in such a specific fashion. This is very specific stuff here.
Right.
You going to buy a lottery ticket or something if it comes up again? What's the action? What's the call to action here?
I was buying lottery tickets. I'm one of those guys. You know, it's got to get okay. close to. It's got to be 500 million or more.
You one of those dudes that do you stand at the counter and scratch them too? Let me see
no.
if I have a nickel
uh-uh.
here. I...
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Uh-uh.
Well, thank you for that.
But it's you start. You know, I said during the break when we came back and restarted the conversation, and I said that during the break, I flashed back 33 years ago to the floor of the Board of Trade and guys standing on the edge of the pits, really didn't matter which pit you want to talk about, even the options pits. And they were doing hand charting on buy sell cards. They're doing hand charting and it's point and figure charting. So when the market would go up, they'd make an X. When the market would go down, they'd make a zero. Or an O, 000. And then when you get that X in that 5 minute time period, when you get that X above the previous 5 minute period, off to the races, baby. They did it all the time. So what the reason I mentioned that, along with the Minneapolis wheat, along with all this other stuff, is you look for similarities and you look for when patterns start to repeat, you better pay attention. And that's
when
kind of
what to repeat, you start to pay attention.
That's kind of what we're talking about in all of this.
That's right.
There are signals coming from the markets all the time. All we're trying to do is figure out what the smoke signals say, Davis.
Right.
That's really all we're trying to do. And hey, the last time I saw that puff of smoke, it meant. That's the reason that we're talking about this stuff all the time. All the time. All right. Hey, thanks for listening today, guys. Really appreciate you. Tomorrow morning, we're talking land values with Randy Dickoot. And tomorrow afternoon, Ted Seifert is right here on AgriTalk. Thanks to Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your Syngenta retailer to learn how Tavium can help protect against tough and resistant weeds for 3 weeks longer than dicamba alone. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide.